house. She's very well trained. She's practically my baby. Why?
Pizza Plaza, right?
The confusion on her face increased. When you order pizza, do you ever order from Pizza Plaza? I asked as I threw the papers into a rough pile. I knew I sounded impatient and a little demanding, but I suddenly didn't have time for niceties.
Yes?
Marianne narrowed her eyes.
Angel, what the heck is going on?
I shoved the keys toward her. I'm sorry, I really am, but I have to go. I dropped a $5 bill on the table to cover my coffee, grabbed the pile of papers, and dashed for the door. I knew exactly what had happened that night. I knew who'd made me a zombie. And I knew who the zombie killer was. Chapter 34. Herbert Singleton wasn't a zombie, just an asshole who could only get laid if the girl was too wasted to say no. That piece of shit had slipped me some date rape drugs and taken me for a drive so he could score some one-sided action. I could be charitable and say that he hadn't planned on dumping me out in the middle of nowhere after raping me, probably in some hotel room, or maybe some local parking lot. But when he saw I was starting to seize or have trouble breathing, he panicked and headed to someplace remote where he could dump my body. The picture showed a fuckload of blood in the car, yet the report said the driver had been ejected. In other words, the report was wrong. When Herbert lost it on that curve, neither of us were thrown from the car. Maybe Herbert was killed in the accident, but I was still alive, though pretty badly fucked up. But there'd been someone else out there who'd either seen the accident or come upon it before I managed to finish dying. Someone who knew me. Someone who thought that maybe I could use a second chance. Someone who made up a story about having to change his shirt so that he could get me away from the accident scene. I drove like a bat out of hell with one hand on the steering wheel and the other working my cell phone. The dispatcher at the sheriff's office refused to give me any of Marcus's contact info at first. I finally told her I worked for the coroner's office and lied and said I needed to get his cell phone number for a report. She reluctantly gave it to me, but only after putting me on hold for an interminable length of time, during which I was pretty sure she called the coroner's office to be sure I actually worked there and wasn't some sort of psycho stalker chick who had a major crush on Marcus and was doing a really sloppy job at stalking him. Okay, I probably did have a crush on him, but if I was going to stalk him, I'd be a lot better at it than this. I called Marcus, cursing when it went straight to voicemail. I left a message asking him to call me as soon as possible, stressing that it was really important, but I had a feeling I was wasting my breath. Somehow I suspected that Ed wasn't going to give anyone the chance to warn Marcus that he was in danger. Ed, who somehow knew about zombies and who realized the pizza delivery guy was one when Marianne's dog indicated that he was a corpse. He'd seen the blood in the picture from the accident scene and realized that I had been in the car. He knew there was an explanation for how I'd survived. Realized that Marianne's dog had indicated on me because I was a corpse, not because I handled corpses. And that wasn't the first time he'd found a zombie that way. He'd probably been part of that search team on Sweet Bayou Road when that teenager went missing. And Adam Campbell had been so hospitable to the search teams. At some point, Ed saw kudzu indicate on Adam. Ed had also realized that there was only one person with a motive and opportunity to turn me into a zombie. One person who obviously also had the means to do so, and who had a relative with the connections and influence to get me the job I needed. That explains the grief, I thought, sick with worry. He realized that Marcus, his best friend, is a zombie, and for some reason he feels compelled to kill zombies. I didn't know why, but I knew I was right. But would Ed really be able to bring himself to kill his best friend? That wasn't something I was willing to gamble on. Unfortunately, right now I was dead in the water. I didn't know where the hell I was going. I had no idea where Marcus lived, and I was damn positive there was no way I'd be able to squeeze that info out of the dispatcher. I even called information, but I wasn't very surprised to find he was unlisted and unpublished. There weren't many cops who made it easy for people to find them. I could understand that. But right now it was pissing me the fuck off. Shit, at this point, I wished I was a psycho stalker who followed him home from work and that sort of thing. At least then I'd know where he lived. Wait. I was being stupid. I needed to slow down and think this through logically. Marcus was off duty.
He was going to be off for the next couple of days. He and Ed were supposed to go hunting. Ed wasn't going to chop his head off at his house. No, Ed would want to do it someplace remote, where he could find a way to make it look like an accident, or dispose of the body. I drove to the library as fast as I could get away with. I'd learned a trick or two from working with Darrell, and the one that was most useful to me right now was the trick about how to find information. I still wasn't the sharpest knife in the drawer when it came to computers, but I was hoping I didn't need to be. There were several empty terminals in the library computer room, which saved me the trouble of physically tossing someone off of one. The computer was slow as molasses, and I jiggled my foot impatiently as the website loaded. But thankfully, the parish website had been designed with idiots like me in mind, and the link for the property tax search was clearly marked on a nice big button. Pecking out the letters as quickly as I could, I typed I-V-A-N-O-V, praying that the uncle who owned the land they always went hunting on was on Marcus's father's side. If he had a name other than Ivanov, I was out of luck, and so was Marcus. My luck held. There was a listing for Ivanov Marcus. But more importantly, there was also an Ivanov Pietro for a large chunk of land at the north end of the parish. Fingers shaken, I pulled up Google Maps, stuck in the address of Uncle Pietro's property, printed out the resulting map, and got the hell out of there. I knew there was still a very real chance I was completely wrong, and Ed wouldn't bother going all the way to the north end of the parish. It was quite possible that he was currently in the process of taking Marcus out to some nearby back road for some head lopping. But if that was the case, I had no chance of finding them in time anyway, so I might as well commit to stopping him where I think he might be. Yeah, I know my logic left a lot to be desired, but my intuition screamed that I was on the right track. I knew the murder of a cop would be taken a hell of a lot more seriously than that of a pizza delivery guy or a mortuary worker. It wasn't fair, but it was the truth, and Ed knew it, which meant that he needed to find some way to make it look like an accident, like, say, on a hunting trip, in the middle of bumfuck nowhere. Before hitting the road, I'd quickly made up 2 bottles of brain slush. Those were now sitting in the cup holders in the console. Plus I had the cooler full of brain food in the back seat. Even though I was already pretty full up on brains, I went ahead and sucked down one of the slushies while I drove like a madwoman and prayed there weren't any state troopers on the back highways. I'd never gone this far overboard on brains before. It would have been an insane waste under normal circumstances, but right now I didn't give a fuck about conserving my stash. I only wanted to be sure I was fully tanked up. But as soon as I tossed the empty bottle aside, I discovered something amazingly cool. Suddenly, my senses were sharper than they'd ever been in my life, and my reflexes could have given Dale Earnhardt a run for his money. I grinned and increased my speed. Zombie superpowers could come in handy at times. It was a good thing I had those heightened reflexes and senses. If not for them, I'd have totally missed the twisted sign by the little dirt road. Slamming on the brakes, I somehow managed to wrench the car around in time to make the turn without going into the ditch. I could see fresh tracks in the mud, which relieved my worry that I might be headed in the wrong direction. But my poor little Honda shimmied and gave out some ominous noises as I forced it over the ruts and through puddles. This road was meant to be navigated by a truck with much higher clearance, and certainly not at the speeds I was attempting. I was barely a mile down the road when the car gave a sudden lurch into a rut, and I came up hard against the seatbelt. No! Shit! I jammed it into reverse, but I could hear the tires spinning. I was stuck, and good. Shutting the engine off, I quickly thought through my options and plans. Hell, I didn't have a plan other than warn Marcus. He was the one with the gun and the training and all that stuff. But all that would be useless unless I could actually warn him. There was no way he'd be expecting an attack from his best friend. My eyes fell on the second bottle of brain slush. I twisted around to look at the cooler in the back seat. I smiled my best bad bitch smile. Oh yeah, I was about to burn me some brains. Chapter 35. I've never been anything remotely resembling athletic. I'm pretty sure the few times in my life when I actually made myself run were only after much threatening from gym teachers, back when I still went to school and suffered such fates. But if running had ever felt like this, I don't think I'd have ever stopped. I raced down the road like the mutant love child of a gazelle and a cheetah, far faster than I'd have been able to drive it, thanks to that second bottle of brains. Now I figured I had maybe 10 more minutes at the pace I was going before I crashed and started to rot. Luckily, it was only about a minute later that I reached the large clearing at the end of the road. A couple of hundred yards away, Marcus and Ed were busy loading gear onto 2 4-wheelers. Saving the day with brains to spare, I thought in euphoric glee. They turned in unison at the sound of my running footsteps. Marcus' eyes widened in surprise.
Angel? What on earth are you doing here?
Ed looked surprised as well, but his expression quickly turned wary, and for good reason. I was still running all out and had no intention of stopping until I'd knocked Ed on his ass. Marcus, I yelled as I charged toward them. I know you're a zombie, and you made me. Ed does too, and he's... A loud bang slammed through the clearing, cutting off my words as I went crashing to the ground in an awkward, flailing sprawl. Pain jabbed hard and deep, and I gasped raggedly as I struggled to get back to my feet. For some reason, I couldn't get a deep breath. The clearing swam around me as I scrabbled upright. I needed to warn Marcus and stop Ed. I needed to breathe. Why couldn't I breathe? I heard a second bang and something hit me hard in the chest. There was a sense of pain, but it felt strangely removed. I coughed, and blood bubbled out of my mouth, copper metallic taste fading almost as soon as it hit my tongue. Oh, that's why I can't breathe. I could only stare at the pistol in Ed's hand as I sagged first to my knees, then onto my side on the ground. Color and sensation faded with the speed of a whirlwind. I made one more try to get enough breath to yell a warning to Marcus, but it wasn't happening. Marcus wasn't stupid. The simple fact that Ed had shot me was warning enough. He lunged for the rifle on the four-wheeler with amazing speed, especially considering he had to be wondering what the fuck was going on. But Ed already had his gun in his hand. I could see indecision sweep across his face, but in the next instant it was gone, replaced by rabid determination. He swung his arm around as Marcus's hand closed on the rifle. Another shot slammed through the clearing, and for a split second I thought Marcus had won and gotten his shot off first. Then he crumbled to the ground with a hole in his forehead, while Ed slowly lowered his gun. I wanted to scream in horror, but I still couldn't make much sound. Just a couple of gurgles of blood, and not too much of that either. I couldn't feel my heart beating at all anymore. I was pretty far into being dead at this point. Those extra 9 minutes worth of brains had been chewed through in seconds. I couldn't tear my eyes away from Marcus's still form. Had I been wrong about him being a zombie? And if he was, could a bullet to the head kill him? He wasn't moving at all. Ed let out a shaky breath. God damn it. Pain flashed over his face. Damn it. It wasn't supposed to be like this. I wanted to scream in rage. Oh, gee, sorry, I fucked up your intentions of killing him all nice and neatly. He shifted his gaze to where I was lying, then wiped a trembling hand over his face. I know you're not really dead. I only slowed you down. A shudder crawled over him. Oh, God. I liked you, he said, voice rough. You seemed so normal. Why'd you have to turn out to be a goddamn monster? He let out an inarticulate scream of rage that seemed to be directed more at the heavens than at me. Then he sagged and swiped his eyes with the sleeve of his jacket. Fucking zombies, he muttered. You motherfuckers take everything, don't you? If I love it, you fucking take it. He took a ragged breath and seemed to focus on me again. Angel died in that wreck. I know you think you're Angel, but she died. I shook my head, fear and anger battling it out inside of me. No, I managed to rasp out. You're wrong. I'm Angel. His mouth trembled for a brief second. No, you're a monster, the worst kind of monster because you make people think you're alive, then you go and bash their head in with a fucking anchor and... He spun away abruptly as his words roiled within me. Ah, shit. Boat and accident, my ass. It wasn't supposed to be like this, Ed said in a hoarse whisper. He swiped at his face again, and I realized he was crying, which only pissed me off more. He was going to be all weepy and emo because he'd shot me and his best friend? Fuck him. I wondered about Marcus, Ed went on, voice still hoarse. Marianne's dog acted a bit funny around him at first, but then he kept playing with the dog. Told myself it wasn't possible. He flicked a glance my way. Then Kudzu indicated on you. I didn't believe it then either. Anger flashed in his eyes. I was an idiot. All this time your bodies have been desecrated, animated by this monstrous shit. I'm not a monster, you stupid fuck, I tried to yell, but it came out mostly as rasps and gurgles, and I had no idea if any of it was understandable. But even if it was, Ed ignored it. He was too caught up in his own self-righteous pity party. Now I'll give you both the mercy of a true death, he said, squaring his shoulders. He slowly holstered his gun, then, almost reluctantly, looked over to where Marcus lay sprawled on his back on the ground. He was silent for several seconds, then shook his head. I'll finish you off quickly, Ed said to the possibly dead Marcus. I owe you that much. He turned away and began to dig through the gear on the four-wheeler. He wasn't paying attention to me anymore. I figured he was going to let me crawl around and moan a bit before he gave me his mercy. Yeah, well, I had no desire to roll over and give up yet. Part of me felt sorry for him, but the rest of me was simply pissed off. I knew I had it in me to get back on my feet and move toward Ed. It would take a lot more than two bullets in the chest to keep me down. When he shot me, I'd collapsed from the shock as my body took a hard nosedive into being a hell of a lot more dead than usual. But that had pretty well worn off by now. My chest was a mess, but it didn't hurt. I still couldn't breathe, but I didn't need to. Whatever made me a zombie was taking care of all that shit. I'd be slow, though, and pretty damn uncoordinated. I was definitely a mess. Ed would have no trouble hacking my head off. Good thing I had an ace up my sleeve. Or rather, something much better than an ace. Two of them, in fact. I shifted slightly, not enough to draw his attention, just to where I could pull one of the plastic bags out of the side pocket of my cargo pants. The contents were still pretty frozen, and swallowing the chunks of icy brain down began to hurt like shit after the first few gulps. But that faded quickly beneath the blissful feel of my chest knitting itself back together. I finished that one and let the empty bag drop, then pulled the second bag out and ripped it open. I clambered to my feet, still shoving frozen brains into my mouth as fast as I could swallow them down. Oh yeah, this was the good shit. I was whole again, better than whole. Ed saw me stand out of the corner of his eye and spun, machete in his right hand. He raked a narrowed-eyed gaze over me. I wasn't sure if he could see that I'd healed up. The front of my shirt was still covered in blood, and it wasn't as if bullets really left big gaping craters in flesh like in the movies. So you're still strong enough to stand, Ed said, answering my question. His hand tightened on the machete. You fuckers don't like to stay down, do you? His mouth twisted in a parody of a smile, but there were still tears in his eyes. But once I take your head off and burn the skull, then it'll all be over. I don't think so, I said, then crammed the last piece of frozen brain into my mouth and let the plastic bag drop to the ground. Ed looked puzzled for only a couple of seconds before comprehension flashed across his face. He took a step toward Marcus, raising the machete up high in his left hand, while pulling his gun out with his right. This has to be done, Ed said through clenched teeth. I know you don't believe it, but you're a monster. Nah, not buying it, I said with a shake of my head. I'm still Angel. I've never killed anyone. Yeah, what happened to your dad was horrible, but we all make choices. Right now, you're the monster. Agony swept across his face as I ruthlessly shoved down the surge of pity that rose in me. You can't stop me, he said, doing his best to curl his lip into a proud sneer. I'll finish him, then finish you. Oh, yeah? I said. Then I couldn't resist. I took a deep breath and yelled, Zombie superpowers? Activate! Then I moved.
Chapter 36.
Oh, Ed did his best to shoot me again, but I just gobbled down 2 brains worth of brainsickle, and I was fast. Not outrun speeding bullet fast, but my reflexes were pegged at fuck yeah. He got 2 shots off, but I could tell exactly where he was aiming and see the tightening of his trigger finger. It felt almost effortless to simply step out of the paths of the bullets. In the next breath, I was on him and had the gun and machete ripped out of his hands. I took 3 steps back from him, then stepped on the machete blade to break it. I had a split second of worry that I was going to stomp on the blade only to have my foot bounce right off it. But my super brainy state didn't fail me, and the metal snapped with a terrifically satisfying crack. I almost tried to see if my zombie strength would let me break the gun, but figured it'd be way too embarrassing if I failed at that. Instead, I flung it as far as I could into the woods, watching with satisfaction as it sailed several 100 yards. He'd be a long time trying to find it. But then I suddenly didn't know what to do. I watched the terror crawl across Ed's face as he looked at me, his eyes wide and full of white. He saw me as a monster, no doubt about that. I could smell the fear. My senses were so high I could hear every thump of his heart. Beads of sweat popped out on his upper lip as we stared at each other. I was hungry, too, but not in the stomach-clawing, wolverine-in-the-belly way I was used to. Beneath his terror, I could smell that he was prey. In this moment, I was predator. Yeah, I could be the monster. A really awesome monster. I could be like this all the time. Strong and fast, fucking invincible. I moved toward him, and he stumbled back against the four-wheeler. No. Oh, God, please, he stammered, his breath coming in harsh pants. You smell good, I murmured. Hunger swirled through me as I listened to the rapid flutter of his pulse. I could smell his brains beneath it all. Every time he exhaled, I could smell it. How awesome it would be. Warm and fresh. A scrape of motion drew my attention, and I flicked my gaze to the side long enough to see Marcus's leg slowly moving. He's alive. Relief slammed through me, and I took a step back from Ed, forcing down the feeling that I was allowing prey to escape. Marcus is alive, or sorta. He's a zombie. He's really a zombie. Wow, that would have sucked if Ed and I had both been wrong about that. I took a deep breath and speared Ed with as menacing a gaze as I could manage. I must have done a pretty good job of it, because he went wider than I ever thought anyone could be. Regret twinged through me, but I knew I couldn't back down. I liked him, and I even felt a little sorry for him, but he was perfectly willing to murder his best friend. Go. Run, I snarled. I don't ever want to see you again. And if you kill any more zombies, I'll hunt you down and eat you, then I'll kill you. I crack myself up sometimes. He made a strange sort of gibbering noise, then spun and took off running toward the woods. He stumbled a couple of times, but scrabbled back up and kept going. After a couple of minutes, the sounds of him crashing through the underbrush faded away. I hoped he fell into a few patches of poison ivy along the way, followed by a sticker bush, then maybe a wasp's nest. A low gurgle came from Marcus, and I abandoned my brief desire to chase Ed down. I hurried over and crouched beside him. His eyes were open, but he didn't seem to be seeing anything. Wow, babe, you're a mess, I muttered. I knew what he needed. Unfortunately, I'd downed all the backup brains I had on me in my big showdown with Ed the zombie hunter. I did a quick and frenzied search through the cab of the truck, and then through Marcus's pockets, but failed to turn up keys to the truck. Aggravating, they were probably still in Ed's pocket. Whatever. I was still strong as shit, and fast as well. And it was only about a quarter mile to the car. I turned to the moaning Marcus. Okay, big guy, up you go. Grabbing his wrists, I pulled him upright, He swayed and would have fallen if not for my hold on him. Worry sliced through me. How much damage had the bullet done? If I gave him brains, would everything in his head grow back to what it had been before he was shot? Or would he be a vegetable zombie? I couldn't think about that right now. I slung him over my shoulder in a fireman's carry, got a solid grip on his wrists, wrapped my other arm around his legs, and took off running. Marcus was a fairly solid pile of muscle, I quickly discovered. I wasn't doing as much gazelle cheetah this time, more like rampaging water buffalo. I was pretty high on brains, but carrying Mr. 200 pounds if he's an ounce had me fading right about the time the car came into sight. I staggered the last few steps and let him slide off my shoulders onto the ground, barely keeping his head from cracking down hard. Hunger growled at me as I yanked open the back door of my car and popped the cooler open. I grabbed the most solid bag I could find, fighting back the desire to feed myself first. Ripping the bag open, I scooped out a handful and carefully dribbled it into Marcus's mouth, not too difficult since he was all slack-jawed and drooling. But apparently, even a brain-damaged zombie still knew what to do. He gulped them down, and I quickly slopped another handful into his mouth, watching the bullet hole in his head for any sign that it was closing. I continued to hand-shovel brains into his mouth while he made low grunting noises and swallowed down everything I gave him. I thought I could see the edges of the bullet hole beginning to close as I tore open the second bag. By the time I was halfway through, the hole had definitely healed over. More encouraging was the fact that his eyes were beginning to lose the vacant stare. At least I hoped so, and that it wasn't merely my wishful thinking. I was nearly through feeding him a third bag when he suddenly seized my wrist.
"Angel," he said, voice hoarse, "you're okay?"
I nearly laughed in hysterical relief. He was still Marcus, and I'd been the one to save us both. Never would have thought that would happen.
"Yeah, I'm cool. You still hungry?"
He struggled up to a sitting position, then leaned up against the car.
"Fuck yes, but I can hold on if you don't have any more."
I pulled two more bags out, handed one to him with a grin. "Eat up. I kinda hit the mother load recently." I leaned up against the car next to him while we ate. A strange and comfortable silence descended.
"Did you kill Ed?"
Marcus asked after a while. His tone was as conversational as if he'd been asking me if I'd found the car keys, but I could see ache and regret in his eyes.
"No," I replied. "I wanted to, but not because I wanted to keep him from killing anyone else, or for revenge. I mean, I did, but..."
"You wanted to kill him for his brains," he said.
I winced.
"Yeah,
and I think I would have if you hadn't started moving." I swallowed the hard knot in my throat. "It, kind of freaks me out." He surprised me by taking my hand.
"But you didn't. You have control of this."
I wasn't sure what to say to that. I didn't feel like I had control of this. Even now I could feel the urge to do whatever it took to get back to feeling so wonderfully high.
"You're not a killer," he continued. "You're not a bad person at all."
I gave him a weak smile. His hand was nice and warm in mine. He certainly wasn't dead anymore. I liked the feel of it.
"Why did you change me?" I asked, meeting his eyes. "Why me?"
He gave my hand a squeeze.
"Well, it's not like I had planned it ahead of time. But I always thought you got screwed by life in general. You had so much to overcome. And when I came up on that wreck and saw you..."
He let out a heavy breath.
"I figured I'd give you a second chance."
Thanks. Again, what was I supposed to say to that? Okay, so at least it wasn't a random, I'll turn her into a zombie whether she likes it or not, sort of thing. He did save my life. He cleared his throat.
"And in case you think it was purely a pity thing, I also think you're damn cute."
I regarded him for several seconds. Was it a Bride of Frankenstein type of thing? The monster wanted a monster girlfriend? His eyes widened in shock, and it was all I could do to keep from bursting out laughing.
"No," he exclaimed. "Oh, God, no. I never would have turned you for that. I swear. But you were dying, and That cocksucker drugged you.
Marcus, it's cool, I said, grinning. Look, dying was the best thing that ever happened to me. He visibly relaxed.
Okay. Yeah. Good, I mean, not good that you had to die, but, you know.
How long have you been one? I asked. I mean, Ed said the two of you had been friends since you were kids. Then I scowled. And yet he was still ready to kill you. He let out a soft sigh.
Yeah, Ed and I grew up together. About 6 years ago, Ed, my uncle, and I went out hunting. We came across a family of raccoons. I was a dumbass, tried to catch one, got bit.
I frowned. I don't get it. You became a zombie because you got bit by a raccoon? A grim smile crossed his face.
No, I got rabies. Turns out that raccoons and bats are the biggest carriers of rabies in the U.S. And unless you get shots within the first couple of days after a bite, it's pretty much 100% fatal. Once symptoms start appearing, it's too late.
Rabies? Are you fucking serious?
Completely.
I blinked. Wow, I had no idea. That's so weird. So who turned you?
My Uncle Pietro. He felt responsible, even though I was the dumb shit.
He gave a small smile.
One of his businesses is a funeral home down in Thibodeau. He keeps me well supplied with brains.
Wow, I said again. I took a few seconds to digest everything he'd said. There's one thing I don't understand. Marcus looked at me expectantly, and I gave him my best suspicious look. Why the hell was I naked when the ambulance showed up?
The blood, he stated completely seriously. Your clothes were torn and covered in blood, both yours and the driver's.
He surprised me then by giving an embarrassed wince.
I undressed you and, dunked you in the bayou to get the blood off. Then took you as far away as I could so no one would connect you with the accident.
He grimaced.
It was a stupid coincidence that I decided to find you on the same road where a murder victim would be found at about the same time.
Oh, that actually made sense. Of course, that also meant that he'd not only seen me naked, but had also had his hands all over me. Oh, hell. Now I needed a cold shower. We should, probably get out of here, I said, hoping he wouldn't notice how suddenly flush I was. I don't think Ed'll be coming back anytime soon, but there's always the chance. Marcus nodded.
You're right. There's just one thing I want to do first.
I suppose I should have seen it coming, but I was still completely taken by surprise when he slipped a hand to the back of my neck and pulled me in for a kiss. My surprise only lasted for about half a second, though, and after that, I was pretty cool with the whole thing. More than cool. To hell with the cold shower. An eternity later, we finally pulled apart, though his hand remained gently entwined in my hair.
I'm hungry, he murmured, smiling.
Me too, I replied. Somehow I knew that neither of us were talking about brains.
Chapter 37.
Together we managed to get my Honda unstuck, but before we headed back to town, we returned to where the four-wheelers were parked. We drove them both a good ways off into the woods, then I stayed put while Marcus veered off down a trail. He returned on foot about 10 minutes later and climbed onto the back of the one I was driving.
Pushed it into the river, he explained.
After that, we cleaned ourselves up as best we could. My shirt was inconveniently full of bullet holes and blood, but that was easily remedied since I had all my worldly possessions in the trunk of my car. As soon as we were presentable, Marcus used my phone, since his had somehow lost its battery, to call the sheriff's office to report that he and Ed had become separated in the woods and that Ed was still missing. I wasn't sure why he bothered to do that, since I knew Ed was still alive, but Marcus merely gave me a grim smile.
Gotta cover our asses. If Ed ever shows up again, it's gonna look really funny that I came back from our hunting trip without him and didn't say anything. And if he does show up, then no harm, no foul.
I had a feeling there was more going on, but I didn't really want to ask. I drove Marcus home, but didn't make a move to get out of the car with him. He paused with his hand on the door and gave me a slightly puzzled look.
"Would you like to come in?"
he asked. "Yeah," I replied, "but I gotta go deal with some stuff first."
"Your dad?"
It wasn't a question, and I was relieved to see complete understanding in his eyes.
"Will you come back by when you're done?"
I smiled, relieved for a number of reasons. "You know it." Dad was sitting on the porch when I pulled into the driveway. He had a beer in one hand and a cigarette in the other, but I didn't see any empties beside his chair. He watched me as I got out of the car and walked up to the house, a wary and almost painfully expectant look on his face.
"Didn't think you'd have the balls to come back here,"
he said as I climbed the steps, a sneer settling onto his face as if he knew he needed to have it.
"Run out of guys who you could fuck for a place to stay?"
I could only smile. I'd lost my fear of him. I also knew I wasn't tied to him. Whether I stayed with Marcus or slept in my car, I knew I had options. "That's not gonna work anymore. I don't really care what you think of me. I know I'm not a loser." I leaned against one of the porch supports and crossed my arms over my chest. "You're the one who needs me." He scowled.
"I got enough money to get by. I don't need your know-it-all bullshit."
"Cut the crap, Dad," I said. "This isn't about money and you know it. You have no one, just me. Who the hell are you gonna turn to if I walk away from you forever?" Anger flashed across his face and he stood, but I didn't shift from where I was, simply continued to regard him with a calm that seemed to permeate every fiber of my being. It helped that I wolfed down another brain sickle on my way over, so that I could be as sharp and aware as possible. And as fast and strong as possible, too, in case my charm and tact didn't carry me through. I wasn't gonna let anyone smack me ever again. "The funny thing is that I still love you, Dad," I said. "I've been thinking about this a lot. Thinking about the fact that it would kill me if anything bad happened to you and I could have done something about it."
"I can take care of myself," he said, voice rising.
"Is that what you want?"
I asked, keeping my own voice deliberately low. "Do you want me out of your life?" His hands unclenched, and his face seemed to sag.
"No.
God.
He swallowed.
"When your mom..."
"You had to choose between the two of us, and you chose me," I said as I met his eyes. "And I know you probably regretted that choice a million times." Guilt flashed across his face.
"It's all right," I said before he could try to deny it. "I didn't exactly make it easy on you. I made a bunch of shit choices. I was a serious fuck-up of a daughter."
He slumped and shook his head.
"Now you got it all wrong. I could have given you up to the state and kept your mom."
He ran his hands through his thinning hair.
"But I knew she wasn't right." He tapped the side of his head. "She was fun and wild," he went on, "but she couldn't handle any sort of stress. Never should have been a mom. And you were my little angelkins."
His voice caught, and he took a quick sip of beer to cover it.
"But after she's gone, I figured out that maybe I never should have been a dad."
Emotion threatened to squeeze my heart right out of my chest as he lifted his watery eyes to mine.
"I never regretted having them take your mom away," he said.
"But..." He took a shuddering breath.
"Sometimes I regretted staying on as your dad."
He looked away.
"I'd think that if I'd let the state take you, then maybe you'd have ended up with folks who'd known how to rein you in and keep you straight and out of trouble."
He sighed.
I couldn't deal with it."
I wasn't sure if I'd be able to speak around the big knot in my throat.
"Maybe," I managed to say. "Maybe not. But it doesn't matter now. I'm clean. I got me a good job."
I trailed off, then sighed and sat heavily on the porch steps.
"I can't take credit for any of that shit, though. I got lucky. Someone helped me out when I needed it."
I dug my fingers through my hair and grimaced. "I came here thinking I was gonna be all like, oh, you need to do rehab and stop drinking,
But that would be a bunch of hypocritical shit, because I sure as hell never had the guts to go through that. I'll do it, he said quietly. I'll do rehab, counseling, whatever it takes. Is that what you want from me? He looked at me, a painful hope in his eyes. I wasn't sure what to say to that. I mean, there was so much I wanted. This whole conversation could end up being a goddamned Hallmark movie of the week with us falling into each other's arms and tearfully promising that everything was going to be wonderful now because he'd stop drinking and I'd be a devoted and supportive daughter. I knew damn good and well that nothing was as easy as that. If I hadn't been zombified, I probably never would have found the strength to stop doing the pills and hold down a job. I never had any desire to. Why the hell should I? I had no pride, no drive. I'd never been able to see a world beyond what I'd always known. And expecting my dad to become a better person just for me was totally unrealistic. How about we start by getting the beer cans out of the driveway? I said. He gave me a perplexed look, and I resisted the urge to smile. He sure as hell hadn't been expecting that. Beer cans? I don't understand. It looks like shit, I told him. Yeah, it's funny, like, ha ha, we're such white trash because we've always figured that everyone's gonna look down on us anyway, so why not embrace it, right? I shook my head firmly. Well, fuck 'em all. We're only trash if we keep acting like it. Fuck those bastards. He looked toward the driveway, then his gaze swept the rest of the yard and the house. Distaste and regret darkened his eyes. This place is a goddamn dump. I let out a small laugh. Yeah, no wonder we drink and get high. He turned back to me, a ghost of a smile on his face. So you'll stay? I'm kind of seeing someone. I paused. Probably better if I didn't tell him just yet that it was the cop who arrested him, and me, for that matter. But this is still my home. You broke up with Randy? He eyed me with a frown. Yeah, that's over. He narrowed his eyes at me. Over for good? Completely over. Dead. Buried. I said emphatically. To my surprise, he gave a nod of approval. About damn time. I always thought you were too good for that loser. I burst out laughing while my dad gave me a perplexed look. You're absolutely right, Dad, I said with a grin. I am too good for him.
Chapter 38
My dad and I raked up beer cans for the last couple of hours of daylight, then I headed back over to Marcus's house, but not before shocking the shit out of my dad by giving him a hug. Things were still far from perfect between us, but it was one hell of a start. Marcus opened the door before I could knock, took me by the hand, and pulled me inside. He kicked the door closed, and in the next second his lips were on mine and his hands were tangled in my hair. I pulled his shirt off, and oh yeah, for a zombie, he had some seriously awesome abs.
Hang on, he gasped after about a minute of frenzied groping. Somehow I'd lost my shirt as well, and my jeans were unzipped, and I wasn't really in the frame of mind to hang on at all. But he grabbed me by the hand and pulled me to the kitchen, yanked the fridge open, and removed a bowl of what looked like tapioca. He handed me the bowl, pushed the fridge door shut, and snatched two spoons out of a drawer. This isn't tapioca, is it? I said, taking one of the spoons. Marcus shook his head, a sly smile on his face. I think a better name for it is foreplay. The pudding lived up to its name, and nothing fell off that wasn't supposed to.
This book is over, but the story continues. Keep listening after the credits to hear the beginning of Even White Trash Zombies Get the Blues, Book 2 in the White Trash Zombie Series Free.
This has been an Audible Frontiers production. Executive Producer, Steve Feldberg. Producer, Mike Charzik. Music by Michael Whalen. Copyright 2011 by Diana Rowland. Audio recording copyright 2012 by Audible, Inc.
And now a free preview of Even White Trash Zombies Get the Blues, Book 2 in the White Trash Zombie Series.
Chapter 1.
So, are you hiding a body in here or something?
The speaker gave a rasping chuckle as I pulled open the door of my storage unit, but behind his show of amusement was an avid curiosity that he was clearly desperate to satisfy. His question held a certain irony, considering that he fit the image of a serial killer a lot more than I did. Greasy black hair hung in lank tendrils from beneath a soiled Saints ball cap. His "Store This" t-shirt with cut-off sleeves revealed slender arms with a surprising amount of muscle definition, and he apparently had the nervous habit of biting his nails so severely that the tips of several fingers bore scabs. On the other hand, I was the one who had a large chest freezer in a storage unit. Okay, yeah, so maybe that was a teensy bit suspicious. I could practically see the possibilities whirling behind his yellow-tinged eyes. Perhaps I was hiding the body of a past boyfriend, maybe a parent. How about a too-nosy storage unit manager? Nah, I replied with a friendly smile. I won one of those grocery store shopping sprees and didn't have any room back at my house to put a freezer. Didn't want all the stuff I got to go to waste, you know. I flipped the lid of the freezer open so that he could see the contents. He peered in, hungry curiosity, shifting to disappointment, as he took in the sight of several dozen frozen dinners, various plastic containers, and a couple of slabs of ribs wrapped in plastic. Definitely no corpses. Even the ribs were obviously non-human in origin.
Oh, yeah, okay. Makes sense.
He straightened and stepped back as I placed two more plastic containers in the freezer. Made a big batch of soup yesterday, I explained as the hunger nudged at me. It wanted what was in those containers, but I was trying hard to be super careful about not splurging. I knew I needed to ration my supply carefully. I had a nice surplus right now, however, I'd learned from hard experience not to depend on that. I ran out of room in the fridge at home, I continued, so I figured I might as well put it out here for later on. I closed the lid, made sure it was fully clasped. Sorry, no bodies, I said with a laugh. His mouth twisted into an answering smile, but it was clear I'd ceased to be interested now that he knew there was nothing mysterious to be found in storage unit number 534. Good thing he had no idea that the contents of the freezer were far worse than a corpse. He wandered back up to the office while I closed and locked the unit. There was nothing at all that said I had to show him what was in my unit, but I knew damn well that if I didn't let him look, he'd probably have broken in to satisfy his curiosity, and then I'd have run the risk that the contents of the freezer would be ruined. The slabs of ribs were exactly what they appeared to be, and from pigs, not humans, but the soup and the frozen dinners contained my very prized stash of about 3 months' worth of brains. Yes, human brains. Hello, my name is Angel, and I'll be your zombie today. Chapter 2. I know I'm the one with the so-called iron stomach, I said, but even I think this is seriously disgusting. I was under the floor with my head and shoulders in a narrow service tunnel type thing, just far enough to where I could barely peer around the corner where another tunnel intersected the one I was in. There was a corpse in the tunnel on the left. I couldn't see a whole lot, but I could definitely smell it, even through the protective mask that kept me from choking on the grit and dust. So could everyone else. Flashlight? I asked, reaching my hand blindly behind me. Someone shoved one into my hand, but the light only confirmed what my nose had tried to tell me. He was about 10 feet down, bloated up and completely filling the tunnel. Considering that the tunnel was barely 2 feet across at best, I had to wonder what could have possessed him to try to squeeze through this narrow space. One arm was extended over his head, and the other looked to be wedged tight by his side. A pool of reddish purge fluid extended several inches along the shaft, a disgusting reddish-brown discharge from the mouth and nose. A shiver ran through me at the sight of his mangled fingertips and thin streaks of blood along the side of the shaft. He'd done his damnedest to claw his way out or shift position. Did he suffocate or did he die of thirst? God, I hoped it was the first. I worked as a van driver and morgue assistant for the St. Edward's Parish Sheriff's Office, which meant I'd seen plenty of death. Most of the time, the job was pretty straightforward. Someone would die in their home or in an accident. A death investigator and I would come out, the investigator would do his or her thing, and then I would get the body into a body bag and bring it to the morgue, where later I would assist the pathologist during the autopsy. It was nasty, smelly, sticky, and sometimes obscene and heartbreaking. But I loved it. And not just because it provided me with easy access to the brains I needed in order to stay, well, alive wasn't the right word. Nicely undead? Not rotten? I shivered again, though this time from cold. It was early December, and while it rarely got cold enough to make a northerner twitch, I'd lived in South Louisiana my entire life, and anything below 50 degrees was unbearably chilly for me. Besides, we had plenty of humidity, which meant it was cold and damp. And yes, I was a weenie. I shimmied my way back out and climbed up through the gap in the flooring. "Look, that whole section is going to have to come apart," I told Darrell Cusimano, the death investigator I worked with. "There's no way I can pull him out. He's stuck." Supposedly, these tunnels had originally been used to route steam pipes through the decrepit building we were in, but the factory had been retrofitted numerous times over the last 75 years. Old pipes had been ripped out, and new pipes had been laid, carrying everything from water to data lines. Not all of the old pipes had been removed, either, and I had a feeling that was how my dead guy had managed to get himself nicely stuck. I swept my gaze over the floor. Supposedly, sections of the floor had been designed to be easily removed for access to the tunnels, but renovations and construction had covered most of the flooring with tile or linoleum, which meant that getting to the body was going to require some strong hands and possibly heavy machinery. At least it wasn't behind a wall. That would have been a disgusting nightmare. Darrell let out a sigh.
"Well, it was worth a try. Fortunately, you could get far enough in to see."
I snorted. "Dude, I don't think you could even get your head in there." I worked with Darrell for at least 99% of the calls I went out on, but we couldn't be more different in appearance. He was a former linebacker for LSU. Big, bald, black. A solid wall of meat and muscle. Meanwhile, I was a skinny white chick who had to jump up and down on the scale to get it to register more than 100 pounds. He chuckled.
"That's exactly why I need an elf-size partner."
"Yeah, well, you won't catch me making toys or cookies." I tried to dust myself off, then gave up. This whole place was so filthy, I was only rearranging the dirt and sending it up into choking clouds. I wanted badly to put on my jacket, but I didn't want to get it messed up, either from dirt or bodily fluids. "How the hell did anyone know there was a dead guy in there?" I asked.
"This place just got bought. And workmen came in to do some cleanup and construction."
He gave a sweeping gesture at this place. We were in a factory on the banks of the Krieger River, just south of Tucker Point. In fact, the building was literally on the edge of the river, forming part of the seawall, and the straight drop had surprised me when I dared to peek out a window. Supposedly, it had been some sort of big-time car manufacturing plant in the 1920s or 30s, and had then been any number of other things, including a warehouse, a movie studio, a factory again, this time for military vehicles, and then some sort of shipping facility. It had been rebuilt and renovated each time, which meant that it was now a bizarre mix of old and new, with nothing really fitting together properly, and whole areas that didn't seem to connect to anything else. I had to walk through a defunct office section to get to this portion of the warehouse, and while nothing about a dead body could freak me out anymore, the peeling paint, abandoned office furniture, and broken windows had given me the god-awful willies. I figured if zombies could be real, then there was nothing to say the ghosts couldn't be, too.
"Anyway," he said, "the workman smelled something funny. One of the guys was convinced it was more than just a dead rat and called the cops."
I nodded. There was something about dead human smell that was different than dead rodent smell.
"Cops could smell it, too," Darrell went on. "So they called Marianne and her cadaver dog. The dog went right to that spot in the floor and stare down at it. Bingo.
Cool, I said, keeping my voice neutral as I scanned the warehouse for the petite woman and her dog. I spied her sitting on the steps to what had probably once been the foreman's office. I quickly looked away before she could see me looking at her and make eye contact. I wasn't quite ready to talk to her yet. What the hell was I supposed to say? Darrell frowned at the opening in the floor, seemingly oblivious to my angst about Marianne.
Just wish I could figure out why the hell this guy decided to climb through there.
Stealing copper, probably, I said. He turned to me, lifting an eyebrow. I grinned. Not that I would know anything about any sort of larceny. I chose to ignore his amused snort. But copper is pretty damn valuable, and I bet this guy was trying to use the tunnels to get into one of the closed-off sections in case there was any scrap metal he could go through. Darrell pursed his lips and nodded.
It's amazing the things I learn from you.
I'm full of useless knowledge. Now was the time for people with more brawn than I to take care of dismantling the floor. I stepped back and found a spot to wait that wasn't in too many shadows, then had to bite back a squeal as a hand came down on my shoulder. I spun to see Detective Ben Roth standing beside me. He gave me a grin.
Damn, Angel, when are you going to put some meat on your bones?
When you make me a sandwich, bitch, I retorted as I worked to get my pulse under control. He snorted.
It wouldn't help. I've seen you eat. You must have the metabolism of a goddamn hummingbird.
He grinned and patted the spare tire at his waist.
I'm more of a penguin myself. But hey, this penguin can bench his body weight and pass the departmental PT test with flying colors.
And eat an entire muffaletta in one sitting, I added.
I excel at the important things.
Yeah, well, I'd kill to have something resembling curves, I said, patting my non-existent ass. The main reason I could stuff my face all I wanted was because, as far as I knew, I couldn't get fat. And not because of an amazing metabolism, either. Okay, that was probably part of it, but some of it was due to the fact that I wasn't, technically, alive. He chuckled and dropped his hand, but then his expression grew more sober.
I guess you've heard about Ed, he asked.
Marcus told me earlier this week. I did my best to keep my expression neutral, with maybe a touch of, damn, that's fucked up, in it. Ben blew out his breath.
I guess I should be glad that we have such a strong lead on who the murderer is, but it doesn't do us much good with him still in the wind.
I gave a cautious nod. You think maybe he's in the area?
No, I think he's long gone.
He grimaced.
Marcus is taking it hard, though.
My gaze shifted to where the deputy stood on the other side of the long room. Marcus Ivanov looked like he'd stepped from the pages of an ad for hot Russian men, if such an ad existed. Dark hair and eyes, tall with just the right amount of muscle and barely an ounce of spare fat. But beyond the awesome good looks, right now, he looked like one would expect a man to look who'd recently found out that his best friend was most likely one of the most notorious serial killers this area had ever experienced. Shattered, maintaining a tough facade, determined to get through the whole ordeal with the help of his friends and co-workers. I had to hide a smile. Deputy Marcus Ivanov deserved an Oscar for the performance he was given. 2 weeks ago, Marcus's best friend, Ed Quinn, had disappeared during their annual hunting trip. At least that's the story Marcus had given the authorities when the two of us returned to town. The reality was quite a bit harsher. Ed was a zombie hunter who'd been methodically hunting down zombies and chopping their heads off. After discovering that Marcus and I were also zombies, he tried to kill us as well. I saved Marcus's life and defeated Ed, and then gave Ed a choice. He could run, or I could eat him. Well, eat his brain. And I probably wouldn't have actually killed him and eaten any part of him, but Ed hadn't known that. Needless to say, he decided to run. Marcus and I did our best to make it look like the two men had become separated in the woods, and then we returned to civilization and dutifully reported Ed missing.
It probably hadn't been the best possible plan, but it was the best we'd been able to come up with, considering the circumstances. The one part of it that we both hated was the fact that a search party would have to be organized, and we'd have to play along with it.